If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder.
Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Hello. I made a brief sojourn in your alternate reality. I actually live in Los Santos. And that's the game from Grand Theft Auto 5. I've been playing a lot of Grand Theft Auto 5, so I'm acting like I'm coming out of that.
It's a great place for that, Brian. That's a really great point to really just put on Front Street that you've been playing Grand Theft Auto 5 is within the first 5 seconds of the show, derailing it entirely.
Well apparently what derailed it was making a Grand Theft Auto 5 reference to two guys who clearly didn't get the reference and then having to explain it.
That other voice you just heard, who clearly looks like one of the villains from Grand Theft Auto Vice City, as I can remember, is Mr. Justin Robert Scarface Young.
Hello, Mangs.
Well, gentlemen, here we are.
And for the audio listeners, I lost a bet. I lost a bet against Tom Merritt, he of Tech News Today, and Brian's co-host on Framerate, and my co-host on FSL Tonight. We bet on baseball, and I lost. The Pirates lost to the Cardinals. He got to choose whatever facial hair that I shaved in, and I'll tweet out a picture of my ridiculous facial hair, which I wear for a week now, in tribute to his victory.
Justin, I really, really like the way you took a brief pause to explain to all the people who didn't get the reference. When somebody made a reference and it made no sense, I like the way that you brought everyone up to speed. I thought that was really good of you.
I'm going to paint an audio picture of what this looks like. Did any of you see the version of Breaking Bad for Spanish language? Okay. If they do Sons of Anarchy set in Mexico, Justin is one of those characters.
I don't know. What would be the Latino version of a Sons of Anarchy character? Like the way that they have like Walter Blanco.
You look like what's his name? The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Oh, Tuco.
You're Tuco. It's Tuco. Oh, yeah. It's totally Tuco.
You know who you are, Blondie!
And it's all the more amazing when you see Tuco show up in other roles, and he is not Tuco.
Yeah, Eli Wallach.
He is amazing.
Jewish, not Mexican, shockingly enough.
Well, you can be Jewish Western and Mexican, I heard.
They allow dual citizenship?
Yes, you can be Jewish and Mexican.
True.
Yes. I just watched Scarface, and there was the first guy he works for is, you know, the Cuban Jewish guy.
Yes. Oh, so. I always get them mixed up. I get the characters from Godfather 2 and Scarface.
Well, it's like, and you watch Scarface, and it's like watching Godfather and Sopranos. You watch Scarface, you see like what's the old guy in the wheelchair? He's the right-hand guy for the Bogota Colombian cartel guy.
Hector Salamanca?
Yes. You see him there, and it's one of those things that pop up. Moving right along.
Yes.
Moving right along. And I'm going to pull this up. Some people in Japan were given compensation recently, gentlemen. Residents of... Pull this up.
A little make-good yen.
What the heck?
That was my favorite band in the 80s. Make Good Yen.
Japanese citizens were given compensation because they were, well, why did the government decide to give them some money? And by the way, this was sent to us by Demon Duane, and it was awesome.
Hold on. This is like recently they got compensation?
Very recently.
I mean, this has to be for something related to the tsunami or Fukushima or something, right?
They were each given 20,000 yen, which is only $205.
$205 for
a used panty vending machine accident.
No.
I feel like that was right with Fukushima in terms of like dead on guesses.
I mean, you want to talk about a tsunami?
When the rains come, Brian.
Okay, so it's got to. If I was going to guess, and I'm afraid I might be right. Should I dance around what I actually think it is? Because
go.
No, go for it.
Okay, this is, like, I heard when the Fukushima reactor got all messed up, like, people were going in and accepting, like, lethal doses of radiation in order to help shut stuff down, kind of like, you know, kind of like those Chernobyl heroes. Is it something like that where it's like their thank you is, here's $200, you're going to die?
No.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Good.
Those guys got
people suffer in poverty and radiation.
No, I'm sure because I'd hate to think that the moral of the story is the Japanese government values your life at $200.
So well, like you
Brian,
get a knock
those
on
guys got gift certificates to a certain vending machine.
Yeah, you get a knock on your door. You knock, open up the door.
Yep.
Like, all right, they take off their shoes. They step inside. They're Brian-san, here is your compensation. And they start counting out the yen. If it's 20, if it's individual yen notes, it'll take forever. But yeah. Let's just say they write you a check.
Yeah, let's say, you know what? While we're saying it, let's say they're doing it Bob Barker style, and they have like a crowd all like dressed with signs. They're all excited, and they're counting 1 yen, 2 yen, 3 yen.
5 days later,
and I was like, "Thanks." And what's this for again?
You remember very well what it was because you can't forget what happened.
Because I was aggrieved. Like, this was a painful experience for me.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, this is...
One aggrievement! Two aggrievements!
Man, was this part of my job?
No, you're kind of an innocent.
Oh, so I was just going about my own business. I was using a popular vending machine, and then all of a sudden this happened to me.
Yep.
The problem is when you try to get your hand in there because they get stuck on the little knobs.
Knobs. So, okay. Now, am I the only one affected? I would imagine there's a few other people.
Yeah, there's like, I would say that about 18 people in so far were the ones getting payouts.
And we were all in the same place when this happened, weren't we?
Yeah, in the same area.
Okay. It wasn't a meteorite, was it?
Nope.
Because I don't know why the government would feel like I'd be like, what, are you guilty? You feel guilty that fell out of the sky? Ah, yeah. Man. Justin, where's your
was
head
it
at?
Was it for seeing the Japanese dubbed version of Meteor Man, the Eddie Murphy comedy?
Could be.
No.
Restitution for like, we're sorry we made you watch that crap. Where's your head at, Justin? Or do you already know this one?
No, I don't know this one. I would say it sounds like by 18 people, maybe is it some sort of public transportation accident or something that happened on public transportation?
No, they were not groped. I mean, I don't know. Can't say that they weren't groped.
I mean, hey, listen. All right. If you're going to riding Japanese public transportation, there's going to be at least 2% of groping.
Yeah, it's like, animal feces
and canned food.
Yeah, they call it the cost of doing business, right? The business, of course, being going about your own business on public transportation.
And getting your produce fondled.
Okay.
Check freshness, as they call it.
All right, now is this restitution for like physical damage or just like emotionally? Like that was rough.
Probably a little column A, column B.
Yeah. Like, I could still get around, but fairly well, right?
I don't know. Maybe.
All right. Huh.
The Japanese prime minister didn't, like, start throwing hot oil in people's faces, like, for laughs or anything. It's not anything like that, right?
I don't think so.
All right.
This doesn't have anything to do with wild animals, does it?
Is it zoo related?
Now, you know, Brian, as we know in magic, there's a way when you ask a question, when you say it doesn't, I could have said, Yes.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. But then I think you knew I would have gone off on an unpleasant side jag. All right. Now, all right. So we got some critters. Critters. What town is this in? What part of Japan?
Western Japan.
Okay. Which I'm assuming is
Wild Wild West.
Aizaki Prefecture.
Okay. So what could cause trouble to 18 people? Pack of wild monkeys? Pack of wild monkeys steal stuff and start hitting? Oh, no. Oh, no. Is it?
One wild monkey.
One wild monkey's tearing stuff up?
Victims that was my favorite band next to Make Good Yen.
Victims of an ill-tempered monkey which terrorized a town in western Japan are to be offered compensation, an official said. More than 1,000 professional hunters, firefighters, and police officers were mobilized to snare the peaked primate after it set upon 18 people during a 13-day rampage through Hyuga. The wild macaque was finally cornered in a vacant house on September 9th after 280 people had spent the day searching for it. The monkey was put down shortly thereafter.
How big is a macaque again?
No.
I thought they were yay big. I'm trying, slightly bigger than my torso.
That seems like a monkey that would be causing trouble in a movie, right? Like, they're fairly agile, like.
Yeah, like that. Or they would be perfect for, like, comedy hijinks. Like me and Justin. Justin's wearing, like, a nurse's uniform, and I've got, like, a fireman's outfit, and we're running around in circles and knocking heads because the macaque's, like, doing crazy jumping around stuff.
All I know is.
And I make a couple extra bucks selling part of my nurse's uniform to a vending machine company.
If you get $200 for a macaque, when you get a full-on Godzilla running through there.
That's so, crazy. Right,
but why is the government culpable for this? Did the government let it loose? Was it part of, like, Japan's let the macaques run free program that they only got through its first phase?
I think that it has to do with one. It's a face saving thing that they failed to protect the people from it. The assembly voted to compensate them. $200 for a monkey attack.
Now, what kind of damage are we talking about?
Yeah, like, and by the way, the $200, that's not like in gift certificates to the I Got Attacked by a Monkey store or anything, right? Not like the souvenir shop.
It groped them on the subway, Justin.
Like, are we talking? I mean, here's what I'm going to voice what everybody is right now thinking, both live and in podcast form. Are we talking about flying poop?
I think I wouldn't rule anything out.
I actually hadn't been thinking about that, but now that I think about it, that's I'll tell you what, man. If I took a face full of macaque poo. I think $200 would be, like, the right compensation for that. I'd feel like that's just. I'd feel like justice was served.
There's no way people are settling for that, though. You might, because you are a very forgiving person. All right, now, hold on.
But if I got clawed in the face, no way. Yeah. $200 a month. I'm going to write return to sender, jerks. And then I'll send them, like, 200 yen.
I want to send you a... I'll send it to you both. I'm going to send you a link, and I'll send it to you, Justin, I want you to look at this. You look at this search, and you're like, what are they mobilizing to find? What is this group out there? And, if I said this was a scene from Pacific Rim, you'd probably believe it.
All right.
All right, so now we are looking at a Japan Times. Holy smokes! This is like definitely a group of officially orange clad, like as if they were going
all right,
to.
Check this out, Brian, bicycle rider. Among the 18 men and women menaced by the primate, a man in his 20s required a total of 20 stitches in both of his arms and right leg. The man was reportedly attacked from behind while riding his bicycle.
No, not okay, bro. This is now a 20 stitches, $200, and you're getting stitches? No. That's more. By the way, I'm going to switch. I got to make some changes here so I can show it on the screen here. But this is I'm looking at a sea of dudes in orange. Wait, here, I'll just put it up over half this.
As if they were doing a major construction, highway construction project, or they are indeed attempting to try and catch them all.
They're waiting for Godzilla to come through there. I mean, it's like, but they got Brian. You're out on your bike. You're pedaling away. You're like. Nothing can get you other than a car. You think you're like faster than any wild animal.
And then
the last thing you expect is some deranged, psychotic monkey to come after you and attack you on your bike.
And you said 200
stitches? This is a Hitchcock movie, right? Like, I mean, you're pedaling as fast as you can on your bicycle, and this ferocious beast is barreling down on your life? Like, that's terrifying.
Does the article mention, like, I guess everybody just took it or what? Because that's crap money. Like, I'm angry if I've got freaking torn up body parts. Here we go.
Is this, Brian, your pitch? Your pitch to offer your services as legal representation?
Wait a minute. There's more here. It says the city offered 300,000 yen in compensation to the owner of the abandoned house where the animal was captured. How come? Wait. The money will be provided to cover expenses incurred to repair walls and the ceiling of the house, which was partially damaged by the team conducting the monkey hunt. So it wasn't even the ape that caused the damage.
So they're kicking down walls and stuff. Brian, this is your Better Call Saul, son. You need to have your own little commercial. Let everybody know that even though you're not legally able to practice law in Japan,
have you been attacked by a monkey and are being offered the laughable sum of $200? Then call me because I will take your case and get you $300.
And you watch the show and you'll see on his desk there'll be like a book like aviation law, and like Brian's gonna have like, you know, primate tort through the ages.
And I was like, well, first of all, we have to have this argument at maritime law. Like first thing I do is request a transfer of jurisdiction to the deep sea.
In the case of Admiral Nelson versus the Barbary Apes of 1840, the site with citation compensation of no less than the price of, yeah, I mean, there's
Barbary Apes, another great band.
Let me tell you, when alligators went crazy in Florida, I got them $500. When great bears were going around Alaska, I got them $3,000.
Anyway, I like the idea that you were representing the animals and you got the animals paid. I know both sides of these cases. You can trust me, Brian Brushwood, animal lawyer.
I used to work for the animals. Now I work for you. I'm wise to all their tips and tricks.
Take it from me. And then, like, you take off your face and you're really a fox and you wink at the camera and then you put your face back on.
But then it just ends as I fan out, you know, like interdenominate, like just one of every currency, you know, like bling, you know, I've gotten money for animal cases around the world.
And some of them are twigs.
After our commercial break, I have another animal case for you.
Oh, sweet.
Absolutely. This episode of Weird Things is brought to you by viewers like you.
By the way, speaking of which, people specifically were asking how they can sponsor the show. What's the best way for them to reach out, and what could they expect?
Send 20,000 yen to...
Yeah, to be honest, I don't know. I feel like I would definitely just like to kind of just have a place where we could read shout outs, because like finding them through the PayPal system is oftentimes my least favorite part of the entire Weird Things process. So I don't know. We'll figure out what to do with ads going forward. But right now we don't have any ads. And to be honest, it usually winds up having the podcast come out about 72 to, you know, a full week sooner than it would otherwise for me to go through and make sure that I find exactly what it is. And then sometimes they cut off, like the word count cuts off. So I got to email them. It's just a thing. So we'll figure it out. There's no ads this week.
Right. But what I'm suggesting is let's give them a clear directive. Cause like Weird Am I was saying in the chat earlier, like, I want to give money to Weird Things. How much does it cost and what do I get for it? And what's the best way to go about that? So if the problem is that there's not a clear path for them to do that, maybe right now would be a good time for us to make a clear path for that.
I think that it's a very boring conversation that we should not have on air.
Okay. Apparently, if you're watching and listening and you want to donate, good luck. Figure it out is apparently the method.
What I was saying was we'll figure it out.
And follow up to my colleague, Mr. Brian Brushwood, what we will do is we'll try to come up with a better page to do a sponsor, because the problem we had before, there was a character limit, and it just made Justin's life a nightmare to try to do this. we will come up with a page that you will be able to, it'll be like weirdthings.com/sponsor, and we'll put a thing up there if you want to do it, and we'll have a better, more streamlined, efficient system to do this. Does that sound good?
Sure. You almost gave a URL. That was good.
Weirdthings.com/sponsor?
I know, but it's fine.
It's a URL.
I don't know. I
don't know what you want, Brian.
Well, the problem is, like, I mean, just tell people how they can give. And if the answer is there's no physical way you could buy an ad, then say right now there's no physical way to buy an ad, but we're gonna have one soon, or do something besides
what
say,
I said.
Good luck.
You went back and said let's revisit this.
Okay. I mean, I could have sworn it was not what you said, but I could be wrong.
Wow, weirdthings.com/sponsor is the actual page that it takes you there. But the problem is there's a character limit, so we'll figure it out. Anyhow, moving right along. I don't know why we aren't better businessmen, gentlemen. You think?
What's that?
I know. It's no wonder that we did not choose a life in corporate America.
Yeah.
I got a story for you about a guy. This thing happened to this guy. This guy was attacked by a wild animal. Right?
Okay.
You with me?
Yep,
wild
sure.
Wild animal attack, okay?
Japan, macaw, done. Let's move on.
I like the fact that it's not a macaque, but a macaw, a bird.
It's a macaw now. They got a real problem with the M words.
It's like, I'm going to eat you.
So this dude was in this place, and then out of nowhere he gets attacked by this animal. But he prevented the animal from killing him.
He saved himself.
What's that?
He saved himself.
Yeah, saved himself.
Like because he was strong or fast, or did he clever solution? Was he like a MacGyver?
Sort of. It was a bear.
Wow. All right.
Gillis Sir was in Grand Falls, northern some cold ass Canada, and he's out and is going through walking through his woodlot. I mean, he has a woodlot, so he must be Canadian. And suddenly, a large black object ran out of the woods and attacked him. Spoiler alert, bear. To prevent the bear from killing him, Sire grabbed its blank.
Well, I thought that pretty much no matter what animal is coming at you, you should go for the eyes because they're pretty soft and you can't think. So, I would imagine you just
grab the
eyes.
It's right by its mouth.
Well, there is that problem. But like a bear, I would think to like grab the bear's junk, but like I wouldn't know how to find it. And I would imagine it's all buried under bear fur fat. You know, that it's I imagine it's like protected. And then what are my soft, doughy simian fingers gonna do?
Well, but at the same time, like, what is the smallest animal that you could imagine on your junk causing you extreme pain? Small animals that can put a real dent in your wanker.
Okay, but I got to imagine, like, if that is the case, I mean, I'm almost certain that bears have like recessed,
also, we don't know whether or not it's the junk.
No, Ryan, I know, but let's talk said, about that.
Andrew just said body part.
Assuming it is the junk, like, I don't think I could find
it. He's gonna fish hook him like a wrestler.
Yeah, but it's like, I don't even know if you could get at that.
Well, Brian, assuming it was the junk for a moment, and you are correct, like, I have an idea of the general area. I kind of think I know where not to look for the bear junk.
Yeah, okay. Like in the mouth.
Bear anatomy, my anatomy, not radically different.
Right.
But maybe of all the people that have attacked by bears, you know, a high percentage go for the junk and most miss, but this guy got the lucky strike and, like, just got...
As The Wire taught us, if you come at the king, you best not miss.
I'll tell you what, though. Like, if it was the junk, it seems like there's a delay. If you've ever, for the males out there, if you've been hit in your goods, there's like a 3-second, like, oh, I don't know, did it not? Oh, and then you feel the hit. Whereas, like, if a bear's in attack mode, I feel like that 3 seconds, all it needs to finish tearing you in two.
That's a good point.
Did he grab the junk? I mean, that's the question. The junk doesn't seem like a very good strategy.
I'm going to bet he didn't go for the junk.
I think I got it.
What?
Grabbed his paw, and they became best friends as they looked in each other's eyes.
See? If it was a tiger, I'd have this one. I was going to say specifically the toe. He would have grabbed the tiger by his toe. And if he hollered, he would have let him go.
Sure.
What else is there? Can't grab
that's
his tail.
The body parts
bear toes.
Has.
We're done. Body parts.
It's not. Is it? It isn't the eyeball, is it?
Are you asking?
I'm going to officially go for eyeball.
You are incorrect, sir.
Ah, dang it.
I'm going to go butt.
Touched his butt? He was so offended. He slapped
it. Like the Death Star with the one exhaust port that can bring the whole project down.
When I said bear, maybe I should have been more specific.
Listen, Andrew, it's the mustache talking.
Is it like a panda bear or any kind of weird bear? That would be awesome.
It's a real bear. Things. Real bear, not no fake
like an
bear.
An actual bear that walks in the woods, not one that would be found inhabiting various watering holes in my city, San Francisco.
Yeah, all right. So was Justin right? Was it the bear hole?
No.
It wasn't the cubby hole?
Was it an ear? Did he grab his ear? Like twist it like a school marm and just be all like, shame on you.
Told you for the last time, bear!
Exactly. So it wasn't that?
No.
Was it the junk? Did we officially file junk?
No, you never. That was. I went and then you.
Let's submit junk for peer review.
Negative.
Ah! Nipples? Do bears have nipples?
Had a nipple ring on, Brian. He twisted it.
Did he poke him right in the belly button and go just to make him feel weird?
The bear just had it pierced. He was very sensitive.
Can you hook a bear's nose? Like maybe one in a million shot just kind of gets shoved in there? And he's all like, ow, ow, ow. You're like a Three Stooges? Like a Three Stooges thing?
Did he just kind of grab him, not by the junk, but just the hair around the junk? Like, that's got to just send him into quite a tizzy.
The taint?
Yeah.
No.
I'm out of body parts. That's pretty much all the anatomy I know.
The soft nape of his neck.
No.
The tongue? Did he grab his tongue?
Ding, ding. Grab the tongue.
Are you kidding me? Really?
Bear comes out of mouth, the game. The guy reaches out, grabs the tongue, pulls the tongue, and the bear's like, I can't bite down now. Didn't think this one through. Call this a draw, okay? Grabbed the bear's tongue. The bear clawed and scratched at him, but eventually got kind of frustrated and let go and then got bored and walked away. It was like going, damn, the tongue.
All right, Brian, follow me on this because right. I want to file shenanigans. Obviously, Andrew is the brain of this show. There's a reason when he couldn't do it, the show went on hiatus because he brings the research that makes this show special. And I very rarely, if ever, challenged it. But I do believe that this was not, in fact, a news story, but rather an episode of The Three Stooges.
Yeah, totally.
This seems like a Mo Green, not Mo Green. Is it Mo Green? No, Mo Howard, right?
Mo Howard, yeah.
Yes. No, Mo Green was in The Godfather. We're talking about The Godfather.
Because they took over Las Vegas without permission.
Doesn't this seem like a Mo move? Like, why, you bear, I'll tell you what.
That's what I was suggesting with the nose hook thing. Yeah. Man, I can't. This has to be in no way thought out. Just one of those those adrenaline fueled moments of clarity.
You don't think he's an outdoorsman?
I think there's in all the bear attacks in all the alternate universes where some guy goes for the tongue, does not work off this well. Man loses hand. How did you lose your hand? Well, I got attacked by a bear.
Okay. And I had this theory. Now, hear me out before you start laughing at me. I thought, wouldn't it be hilarious to grab his tongue because it's soft and then he couldn't bite
down? Do you think there's like a forum, like mauledbybears.org, that like they just get on a forum and talk about like, man, I'll tell you what, that bear came at me, and if I could do it again, I would blank. You know, I would give him the E Honda 100 hand slap, or I would try to tickle him until he peed himself. Like just all these like strategies. If I could, there was one moment in which my life was irrevocably changed by this bear, and I would like to have it back. And this dude lived out all of their fantasies by grabbing the tongue.
Yeah, congrats, I guess. Like, and the fact is, not only did he have the insanity to grab the tongue, but the fact that not only did it worked perfectly. It worked in a way that, you know, the bear didn't die and bite off its tongue and blood everywhere and then savaged him or anything, or, you know, it just sort of was like, well, that's rude, and just sort of confusedly walked off.
Well, he seemed like pretty pissed off initially, but then he just realized it was checkmate. Even bears realize when they got.
So just as a helpful tip out there, I started thinking, like, well, what other wild animals have tongues? If you get attacked by a mammal and it's your only option, maybe. Sharks do have tongues, but they're not long tongues like ours. They just sort of sit on the floor of their mouth.
Well, plus also you got to kind of reach in that bit of a nasty maw.
Out past the teeth.
You need like, a projectile tongue there.
Okay, I would say like a deer, but the problem is that deers aren't biters. They're like boxers. They rear back with their hooves and they just sort of like and pound the stuffing out of you. So reaching up and grabbing a deer tongue wouldn't be very productive.
Yeah, and deer attacks do happen, but they're not like I was minding my own business chopping wood and the deer came out of nowhere and attacked me.
Yeah, but still, look, okay, fine. You're trying to take a photo of a deer. One of you guys like, oh, let me climb on its back. And then it freaks out and it starts.
Then it happens.
Bark, bark, bark. Look, regardless, man, let's not argue how we got here. The fact is you're being bopped in the face by a deer.
True, yeah.
Don't grab its tongue.
No. So what are you going to do? You grab it by its little deer legs and have it hit itself right in the face and go, why are you hitting yourself? Why are you hitting yourself, deer?
Makes sense.
I feel like we should do this with every animal. There should be a new segment on the show. How would you defend yourself against an animal?
Well, what is the animal with the longest tongue? Like, are there any prehensile tongues?
Ant-eater?
I guess if an anteater comes at you.
Andrew Maine is the,
Gene Simmons.
What about a chameleon? Try to attack you, you just grab its tongue and fling it up and down, and they'd be like, ah.
Like a yo-yo.
Yeah.
Then you can do little tricks, make it walk the dog.
Ooh,
you know?
This is great. This is a good question.
That's
what
cradle.
Is the largest animal in the planet that uses its tongue as a weapon? So it'd be like you got like a bullfrog, right? It was like yay, some of them about, I don't know, almost like half a bowling ball, like a deflated bowling ball size. Right? Is there anything you think that's the biggest one? Maybe.
Sorry, wait. Say it. What? Say it again.
All right. What is the largest animal on the planet?
Yeah.
That uses its tongue as a weapon because
okay.
That's what a bullfrog does, right? You know, whoosh, catch flies and whatnot.
Oh, okay.
You got
so
chameleons.
Count,
I don't know if a chameleon's bigger. It launches its tongue out and grabs things.
Yeah.
What about, like, is there some kind of, like, crazy squid? They just have tentacles, I guess.
Yeah, I think they do. I think, like, squid may have tongues or something. I mean, I wonder. I did some research a while back on squid when I wrote a book about one, but.
Chronological Man, available now.
Wait, you mentioned an anteater, which I guess is bigger than a bullfrog. How big is an anteater? Are they dog sized?
As big as an anteater would eat? No.
Well, I don't know. How big are they?
I don't know. Bigger than an ant? don't know.
No. Yeah. How big are ant eaters?
Let me get my tape measure, Brian. I'll be right back. I've got one out back.
Look, are ant eaters the size of my fist? Are ant eaters the size of my torso?
They're like raccoon sized.
Okay, then that's all you had to say. Was their raccoon size? That was the answer. You got to it.
I thought you wanted a more precise answer, Brian.
No. Bigger than a bullfrog. That's our current champion then. So an anteater has to be the biggest animal that attacks with its tongue then, right?
Part of this is ferocity, right? Like, we're okay with grabbing on that bear's tongue because that bear could kill that man. Like, is it possible, unless you are, like, really, you know, looking to commit suicide by anteater, to be murdered by an anteater?
Man, how would an anteater attack?
So, just here, there are giant anteaters that are, like, 6 feet long.
Whoa! That's big. Has anyone been killed? I'm going to write the words attacked by an anteater into Google. Okay, so far it's trying to autocomplete with antelope.
I was just trying to mind my own business, eating my peanut butter on celery with my raisins on top, and this anteater came along and just...
All right, here we go. Eat this, gentlemen. April 12, 2007, Reuters.com. Argentine zookeeper dies after anteater attack.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it just got real right now. Hold on, I'm loading up the article right now. A young Argentine zookeeper who worked on a giant anteater conservation project died on Thursday after she was attacked by an anteater who mauled her abdomen and legs with its sharp front claws. Her injuries were very serious. When she was admitted, she was already in critical condition. Melissa Casco, 19, died after an operation to amputate one of her legs. Wow, man, that's harsh.
So these things get up to 10 feet long and 110 pounds. So when I said raccoon, I meant a giant raccoon.
All right. I'm calling it, man. Anteaters. Unless you could think of something scarier.
I'll go with that. All right, gentlemen. I have one more for you.
Go.
Touches back to a conversation we had not that long ago. And Brian.
Yeah.
You may recall, we were speculating on life on a planet covered in ice, or a moon covered in ice.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, quick side note, scientists have found what they believe to remain a water-covered Earth-like planet that's some 60 light years away.
Is this the one? I heard on the news that there was some planet that was just not near a star. They just found a phantom planet, but I would imagine that have to be a giant, super gas giant, right?
Yeah, this one, actually, this is 170 light years away. This is different. They found evidence of a water-rich, rocky planet. Unfortunately, it's all broken up.
Oh, geez.
It may be Krypton. We don't know. But the whole discussion about that was quite interesting. And then, not long after we had our conversation about what it would be like on Europa or whatever, you know, in our own solar system, if we had, you know, what would life be like under an ocean trapped under an ice cap? Scientists, our favorite people, in Antarctica were using radar in a plane and satellite photos to try to measure what was below the ice in Antarctica. They found 820-foot-high channels underneath the ice shelf.
So, wait, you mean like what would appear to the layman's eyes like tunnels? Like
massive
out?
Caverns.
And it's and this
to put, you know, the Eiffel Tower inside of.
And these are like completely surrounded by ice. I guess what I'm getting at, is it possible that these are geologically isolated from the rest of the Earth?
They're created by like an internal melt, and so there's water flow through there. As far as they believe, as far as the channels are created, so these are long channels under the ice.
Did they mention if they found any critters? I would imagine
this is just new radar. Like they're just flying planes over there using radar. They're like, we're getting a reading down there. And I don't know if you recall H.P. Lovecraft, At the Mountains of Madness.
I'm actually just reading that.
Wow.
I've actually never read that before. That's like the first thing I thought. Yeah, no.
Actually,
there's a warning to this.
I still haven't read this. Bring me up to speed. I'm familiar with some of the mythos, but not this aspect.
So it's the story of an expedition to Antarctica, and they find in a valley there a ancient city. And it turns out this city is unbelievably old, way, way older than any kind of human civilization. And there's writings on the walls that tell the story of basically the old ones and, you know, the civilization before man.
That's awesome.
As well as specimens. They find specimens of things that, you know.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep it interesting and not tip too much because it goes into an interesting place.
Yes. I mean, that comes before the city part. I'm not to the city part. I've been listening to it.
Dude, that's awesome. So I guess, is there any plans to investigate? They're gonna carve out a hole, drop a sub in there, go poking around? Or I guess you just put a probe in there. It'd probably be more cost effective.
I think at some point, I think they'd like to be able to do that. But when you look at, like, you know, the size, these are like way, way, way deep under the ice cap. And I think at some point, I think they feel like right now they look like they're filled. I guess they're filled with water underneath there.
Our employees give great customer service.
All right, what's happening?
Patient care.
There's pop-ups under the sea. They're crazy. They keep sneaking up with their advertisements. Imagine you're like halfway down in the probe, and all of a sudden a fish comes up and displays a screen talking about, like, do you suffer from erectile dysfunction?
Letting you know about customer service, as even under the ocean, it's job one.
There's nowhere you can get away from our great values here under the sea.
And so, meanwhile, here we find this giant channels underneath Antarctica. In China, they discovered a cave so huge it has its own weather system.
Whoa!
Okay, that sounds like crazy talk, but I just listened to, I think it must have been Radiolab, where they were talking about the sewer systems for New York, and they talk about the different phases. They got to get out all the physical, the solid particulates, and then what comes next goes to another level that's, they throw in bacteria. And there's like one room where it's a giant channel, and it's like an ecosystem where it's like the top part is so much cooler than the bottom part that steam rises up, it collects on the top of the cavern-like room and then drips back down. I would imagine it's like this, but just natural, happening totally on its own.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's ecosystem's so huge, they go down inside of there and it goes on and on and on. You think on our own planet, we just discovered 800-foot-tall, almost 1,000-foot-tall tunnels underneath Antarctica. In China, we're finding ecosystems inside of there that have their own weather systems. This is just Earth. And once we go to Mars, we may say, hey, there's no evidence of life. But then we're going to start to wonder, what's deep down? What's really underneath there? What's under some of these ice sheets? What's inside of these CO2 fields, et cetera? I think that's going to be kind of the exciting thing. It'll take us a long time before we say, no, it's not there. And ideally, I don't think we really want there to be life on Mars.
Oh, because if there is, that means we'll never get to colonize it. That's the only way we want
to. Like some environmental impact study, be like, no, don't hurt this microbe.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that we had spoken about it before, but like Kim Stanley Robinson's Red Mars, Green Mars, Blue Mars, there's a kind of a fight between people who want to terraform the planet, but the people who want to leave it alone are geologists, because they want to study all of these rock formations, and they feel like, you know, changing the atmosphere is going to, you know, you're going to have weathering, you're going to ruin, we're going to lose what made Mars Mars. So, you know, I wonder if even if we have a clean petri dish to move into, if it still wouldn't be a problem.
I heartily agree.
But I guess, I mean, that's just the larger question of, you know, what is exploration? What is proof? What is life? You know, and as we kind of, our tools get better and better and our ability gets better and better to find these things, then that definition is a sliding scale. Right? Like our ability to look for it defines what we are looking for.
That's true.
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, okay. Is there any case to be made? Let's say, because right now, the spread right now is in favor of there's not any kind of living life on Mars. Is that correct? That's what smart money's at. Yeah. What if they say, okay, there definitely is no currently living microbes that we can find, but then they find like giant, you know, paleontological, you know, like a freaking T-Rex kind of giant dinosaur bone style things. Where does that land on the scale of now we're allowed to more trouble? Like, can we still colonize or is it going to be trouble? Or does it make it more attractive because we have a reason to go because there's such important, you know, digs to do?
Here's my prediction, based upon my vast experience of Martian politics and history of Mars, is even if we find life, there's going to be people who are going to want to colonize. It's a whole other planet. And if you have space travel or capability to do that, it's going to happen. The anti-colonized people, the people who are going to say no, you know, look at the people right now who the extreme environmentalists, you know, the ones burning up biotech fields because it disagrees with their religious point of view. The people who are telling other people you need to starve rather than use genetically modified food. Meanwhile, use this seed grain that was, you know, created a nuclear reactor. You know, we can get into this, the hypocrisy of all of that, but there will be a lot of punt people, a lot of moneyed people, people with resources who might be opposed to it. So I think that regardless of what we have, I think we'll go there. But then I think that, you know, I think the confrontation is going to be, you know, Martian environmentalists that are just like, leave it alone. And the terrorism, I think that'll be like a new form of terrorism.
Well, I mean, and also these are all decisions made in absence of necessity, right? Like if all of a sudden we find the asteroid that's 100 years away from like hitting us dead on and obliterating what we know as life on Earth, or you know, let's say, for example, you know, radical shifts in you know, Earth climate makes life far more of a challenge and we have the ability to get to Mars. These conversations are not what they are now in our, hey, we can explore Mars, like kind of point of view, right?
Right. I mean, you're right. Well, and the question is like, what does it ever take for us to hustle up and make changes? Does it have to be like, you know, did it take Y2K threats to get us all to upgrade our computers or what?
I think the hard part,
you know, I don't know. I think, I mean, it's just if you know, our lives are threatened to the point of death, we tend to do things fast.
I think that's the hardest part, is that the greater amount of change you need, the greater the incentive it needs to be. And the problem is the further out into the future it is, the harder it is to do. You know, if it was a short term, we see this burning fireball coming straight at us in the sky, like, holy crap, we're going to react. If it's, you know, that's the problem, that, you know, people who want radical, you know, economic change for combating, you know, how their the greatest potential threat they see with environmental change, you know, is they're frustrated because they, oh, we need to do this now. But, you know, they're arguing about a consequence which is further off and a consequence which total impact is up for debate. And, you know, the argument can be made, well, the choice we make now is worse than, you know, that the cure is worse than the,
well, if
you know,
there's one
disease.
Thing the political climate of the last 20 years has shown me is that it's people are real good at deciding to take care of the thing in the future instead of the one now.
Foresight, the order of the day.
Yeah.
All right. I am going to try to relaunch Wirecast now and see if it'll come back. It finally fully crashed.
Yeah, Justin just froze, and I froze, and we're all frozen.
I would rank our faces, Brian 1, Andrew 2, me 3. You, Brian, you look great. You look like you could be selling that shirt
that
you're
like
wearing,
I was actually,
or your glasses.
I was posing
Andrew,
for that.
Andrew looks like it's his solo album where he's like the guitarist from a band. And this is his solo album. And I look like someone that you would call the police if you saw that face.
Well, I'm dialing right now. I am.
I saw your phone out taking a picture of my frozen face. Hopefully you guys see me and we're all good now.
Yes. No, we're back.
All right.
We back.
You want to jump into some pics?
Yeah, let's pick it up.
Pics. What are you taking pictures of, Andrew Maiden?
Don't ask.
Okay, fine. Who wants to go first?
Just say it ain't his tongue.
I'll go first.
What you got?
So earlier this evening, Brian brought up Grand Theft Auto 5, I believe. And my entire experience with that franchise began and ended when I had a girlfriend who had Vice City, and I would stay up late and watch it until she had to go to work. And I realized I had an addiction. I had a problem. And so I'm not a big game player. I like games. I'm nothing against games. I'm not a big gamer. If anything I'm going to play, it's going to be probably something on my iPad, and it's the kind of thing I'll play when maybe I'm traveling, and it's not going to be – I'm not a big like kind of like run around, shoot things kind of guy. And I don't mean to like disparage that entire genre of game to saying, oh, it's just runner. It's because it's very rich. It's very depth. The amount of storylines going into this, it's amazing. I read probably, you know, I'll spend more time reading articles about games than many people spend playing games, because I find that absolutely fascinating. The amount of resources and energy that goes into creating things, it's an incredible form of art. We can get into the. The difference though between it and film, where like film is still more, you know, anyhow, I'll get into the side point. I digress.
No, but actually, that whole discussion is fascinating. We should save it for a future episode. But like, game designers have the challenge of telling a story where the principal actor doesn't know his lines, doesn't know where to stand, and doesn't know his motivations. And you have to tell a story in such a way to cause all of those to happen.
Yeah, a thing I was going to address too is like, you look at the launch of Grand Theft Auto, and like how many was like $1 billion first week sales or something?
Yeah, dude, broke Guinness records. It was the fastest video game to ever break $1 billion in sales. It's sold over like 12 million copies at this point.
Yeah, but then you compare it to like Avengers or something or some other thing, Avatar, and you realize that the same amount of, but because games, the price is so much higher than movie tickets, is that the number of people who actually played Grand Theft Auto is far, far smaller than the people who will see the billion-dollar blockbuster. And so it's this weird, if you're in game culture, everybody's aware of it. If you're outside of it, it's this thing that other people are like, okay, I kind of get it. And it's like, it's like Mad Men.
There's the other flip side, which is, you know, of course, if you pay $60, you are getting a 40 to 80 to 100 to 400 hour long experience Avatar as well. In fact, Wired Magazine, like over 20 years ago, I think, it must have been just under 20 years ago, they had a breakdown of dollar per entertainment hour per medium. So it's like a CD you will pay $12 for, but you'll play it, 40 to 60 times, so you get about 60 hours of entertainment out of, whereas a magazine you're going to spend $7 on, but you'll read it for up to 8 hours, and then that's it. And so they, I wish I could find that. It was
fascinating. I'll bet comics have to be the bottom of the barrel, right?
Like a good value or a bad?
Bad.
Like buying single issue comics?
Yeah.
Where you're looking at...
But like five bucks for 20 minutes of...
For 12 minutes of entertainment.
Yeah.
And I love comics, but that's the reason why I started... I bought comics when I was a kid, and then, I can't handle single issue stuff anymore. I'll buy graphic novel runs.
I want to say that the CD, the music CD, was the best value at the time, but I'd love it if somebody could tweet us and tell me if they could find that breakdown.
It wouldn't surprise me if video games were now. I mean, just as you pointed out, the amount of time that goes into creating gameplay and all that stuff. But it's interesting because you look at like the Grand Theft Auto did, like you said, like 10 or 12 million copies. That's the same number of viewers that Walking Dead just had.
Wow.
And you look at that, and that's considered a breakthrough hit show, but it's not a billion-dollar franchise because it's, as you said, it's value. But My observation has nothing to do with that, other than to say that my consumption of games is very pedestrian and very simplistic. But it's like I'm dying to play BioShock, dying to play it, right? I just don't know if I'll have the time to play it or whatever like that. And then looking for stuff that's kind of like that or in that world or in that kind of weirdo kind of mythos like that, I came across. My favorite game publisher is like Big Fish Games, find the scissors in the photo. Like that's my level of gameplay. Like I found the scissors. Yay. And they have a trilogy of a game series called Empress of the Deep. And I played the first one and it was like, it's probably like an hour and a half of gameplay, maybe 2 hours of gameplay. It was like $4 or $5, which I enjoyed thoroughly. And it's one of those kind of puzzle type games, but it's fun. It's got a storyline through it. And I played some other by them, and I've always been pretty happy with them. I feel like, oh, wow, I really enjoyed that. My favorite all-time game like that is like Machinarium, which I think is brilliant. I hope they do another one. But, yeah, Empress of the Deep, really enjoyed it, so that's my recommendation. It's on iOS. I don't know if it's on Android or not, but it was a lot of fun. So Empress of the Deep's my pick.
I'm reading The Information by James Gleick. Is that it?
Yeah.
Have you read it, Andrew?
No. I haven't read a book by him in ages.
It's interesting. There's a number of parallels to some other books I've read. It reminded me a lot of The Master Switch, which I've talked about before. It talks about the changing forms of information empires and how they rise and fall. This approaches it from an even bigger kind of way, talking about I just got to the part where they discovered a bit, as defined as the smallest amount of information, a single coin flip. But the whole story kind of starts with European explorers going to Africa and not understanding how it is that these unwashed savages claimed that drums could speak to them. And, this goes back as far as I want to say the 1700s, I'm sure I have all the numbers wrong, but these explorers would go as far as Africa and people would get information from miles and miles away. And that's something that simply wasn't possible. The fastest way to carry information in the Dark Ages was or even in the Renaissance was on as fast as you can move a person. This is before the telegraph. This is before, visual codes or whatever. And certainly before radio. And the question was is this some kind of advanced code? But then they'd listen to all the different African drums and they never repeated. They were always different versions of the song. And they couldn't understand how it was being communicated. And then the book goes on to break down the fact that that all the African dialects are tonal languages, where there's a difference, does it go up or go down, and that cadence mattered in there. And, of course, consonants and vowels mattered as well. But there was so much information conveyed in the tonality of different words and in the cadence of them that you could almost take out the consonants and vowels and kind of understand what someone was saying, especially the more verbose, the longer and more detailed an explanation they give. Instead of saying, Justin, they say Justin with the pornography mustache who is sitting behind the pop screen on the left of the screen. So it's like you say all of those things. They figured out that all of these African drums, you had a high note and a low note, and they just talked. They just hit the notes up and down as if they were saying the words. And miles away, someone could hear, and because they would repeat, because they would, use these verbose patterns, these phrases, kind of like if you've ever done if your grandma ever forwarded you the email where they've removed all the consonants or removed all the vowels, yeah, and say, if you can read this, you are a genius or whatever. Like, that's essentially the way they were hearing the drums talk to them. And it was fascinating and that's just how the book begins. From there on, it talks about the development of increasingly high fidelity forms. I just now got to, I'm about halfway through, so I just got to Alan Turing, and I'm sure that we have adventures of telephony and broadcast and the internet coming up.
And let me know when we get to Peter Frampton. Do you feel like we do? And
yes.
How he uses the guitar to talk to white folk like that.
Exactly right.
That's
good stuff.
I never knew that. Realized that about African languages, that it was that worked like that. That's very interesting. I guess the medieval lute just didn't work across fast.
I'm gonna name for you guys some things. Tell me if you have enjoyed them. Saturday Night Live,
sure.
Through the mid '80s and the '90s. Conan O'Brien's late night show.
Sure.
Mr. Show.
Yeah.
With Bob David. All of these, including as well as other ancillary stuff like Kids in the Hall, were in some way affected, as well as Triumph the Insult Comic Dog, by Robert Smigel. My recommendation for you guys is a free podcast. It is an interview with Robert Smigel about his life and career. It is on a sports podcast called The BS Report with Bill Simmons. There is the closest they get to talking about sports is one of his two unmade scripts that were based on Saturday Night Live characters. One of them was a Hans and Franz movie that was going to star Arnold Schwarzenegger.
It was
going to
be a musical, right? Yeah.
Did not get made because Last Action Hero bombed, and he swore that he would never play himself again. because he did not want to do meta Arnold Schwarzenegger comedy anymore.
Wow.
And then the second one was a super fans movie, a Da Bears, those guys. They wrote a whole movie, which he goes into detail on. That's the only sports that are talked about. So if you don't like sports, don't worry about it. It is all about Robert Smigel. It's at a ton of great anecdotes if you like any of those projects that I talked about. Which, by the way, do you know that Bob Odenkirk co-wrote the initial Superfans Da Bears sketch?
No way. Of course, he the moment you said that, I could picture him. I mean, he's got the perfect voice for it, right? He's got that heavy Chicago accent.
He's a Chicago guy. So they did it initially on stage, and he was one of the super fans. And he had left SNL as a writer by the time that they wound up doing it on the show. But yeah, I think even if it's not Bob Odenkirk, it's another famous writer, but he wrote everything but the end of the famous Chris Farley, Matt Foley motivational coach.
Oh, the van down by the river.
And, yeah, you're going to be living in a van now.
And, so wait, he wrote everything Odenkirk, but that catchphrase?
Wrote everything except for the end, because Smigel wrote the end, which was Farley falling through the table at the end. And he said he always feels guilty about it because Farley spent the rest of his life falling and running through things. This became this defining element of his career was that he was so funny at just obliterating objects with his body in comedic fashion that he spent the rest of his career and unfortunately short life doing. I will spoil only one of the anecdotes. He talks about a writer, Al Franken's writing partner wound up fell ill with a disease, and Lord Michaels had this huge dinner with pretty much a who's who of comedy to come kind of pay tribute to him as he knew that he was moving into the final phase of his life. And Dan Aykroyd, who apparently, as according to Robert Smigel, is prone to wax poetic and about things, and so goes on this very long story about how back in the old days they were there for the art, they were not there for the money. At which point, after Aykroyd beautifully kind of sums up their experience in the early days of SNL, Bill Murray pipes up and says, "Yeah, Dan, you're right. You're absolutely right. We weren't there for the money. We were there to make Lorne money." So go check it out. It's the Robert Smigel episode of the BS Report with Bill Simmons. It's extraordinarily funny. He is a amazingly candid guy. And if you are a fan of comedy, he is really an indispensable figure. Worked on the Dana Carvey show, hired Louis C.K. for his first writing gig at Conan.
Wow.
A titanic career.
I love that. If you're a fan of comedy, otherwise, you know, you're just a heartless bastard who just does not like to laugh and has no soul.
I mean, I guess it's one of those things where it's like, I mean, it's worth it for anybody who likes the things that I mentioned, but yeah. I found it just sort of remarkable. Anybody who likes to think about comedy on the, like, why comedy works level, it was enlightening. It was like reading the Bible. Like, it was just an amazing tome.
That sounds excellent. Well, yes, that's it.
That's not how you do it.
You gotta say the thing.
Come on, it's like we know you got a lot going on, and you kind of forget. It's like you get to the end, and then you say,
"Well, folks, we're all out."
Justin, I'm not getting through to him. Can you maybe?
All right, it's a one line that you always say. You can't forget it or else it's weird.
It's been really unusual.
Dang it.
Really unusual objects is the secret side project that Justin and I do. This isn't that show. You can't steal our word.
Our bums. It's been weird.
Woo! Oh, my God, he said it.
Good. Are we ready to wean this pit bull off of baby's blood?